in association with Newsarama. Welcome again to Word Balloon, the comic book conversation show. This is John Suntress, just coming off the flu, but very pleased to present today's conversation with Andrea Romano, the casting and voice director for Warner Animation and Sony Productions, who's been directing the dialogue for TV shows like The Boondocks, Pinky and the Brain, SpongeBob, and all the DC superhero projects, including the Batman, Superman, and Justice League films and TV series. Today we'll get behind-the-scenes information about the upcoming Batman Gotham Knight DVD, the highly successful Justice League New Frontier, and next fall's new TV series, Batman the Brave and Bold. Andrea entertains us with many star-studded stories that range from first casting Kevin Conroy as the voice of Batman, making Brooke Shields a fan of animation voice acting, to finding SpongeBob roles for people like Gene Simmons and David Bowie. We'll get to the superhero talk, but first, our conversation begins with a look at The Boondocks, the Aaron Magruder comic strip that has made a successful transition to TV animation.
My listeners mostly want to hear about the superhero stuff, and okay. I know a lot of people like The Boondocks as well, and I think that's an interesting contrast to the other stuff that you do.
I'll say. Have you watched it, John?
Absolutely. I watched last night.
Very good. Which one aired last night?
It was the one where they sneak into the movies.
Oh, very good. I don't know if I've even seen that one yet. Very good. I just saw the one called Thank You for Not Smoking. That wasn't called Thank You for Not Snitching. Did you see that one?
No, I didn't.
Hilarious. Hilarious.
My favorite one is the one from the first season that supposed that Martin Luther King was in a coma all these years.
And hugely popular.
Outstanding.
Episode. Everybody loved that episode. It was hard to make, but boy, it sure did get nice response.
Is everything okay with that show? Is that, you know, is it coming back for a third season, or you don't know, or?
It's looking good. It's good. Looking like they're very close to making a deal to make 15 more episodes for another season. It's a hard show to produce. There's a lot of celebrities in it. There's, you know, from Samuel Jackson to Quincy Jones to all kinds of wonderful actors and just playing celebrities. And then, as you probably well know, there's also a lot of rappers.
Sure.
And so we're constantly trying to track them down as to where they are in the world and, you know, get them into the recording studio within the production period that makes sense for us. And so it's a difficult show to make on that, in that aspect of it, but it's just one of the pleasures of my life to be standing there directing Snoop Dogg through a rap song. It's just amazing to me. There was one period of time within a couple of weeks I recorded Snoop Dogg, Busta Rhymes, what's the guy from Pimp My Ride? Exhibit.
Oh, sure.
and a bunch of those guys, these major, major rappers who are, you know, these enormous men. And really, they're just the gentlest human beings who have gotten into this industry that, you know, for whatever reason, it's got its own sort of specific issues, shall we say.
Okay.
But because they're doing something that they're not familiar with, which is voice acting, they really are malleable. They let me tell them what needs to be done, and they let me make it easier for them, and that's just great. And then we go into doing rap songs, and they just bowl me over. They completely astound me with how fast they are. You know, usually when you record music in an animated series, for example, like Animaniacs or Pinky and the Brain, mm-hmm. you send those actors a guide, scratch track, they call it. It's somebody else just sort of singing the songs for them so they get an idea of what the song sings like. There's a piano track so they can follow it. A lot of these rappers would come in and they had heard nothing before they walked in. And so I'd say, well, okay, take a listen. And they're all completely confident saying, hey, I'm a gangster rapper. I know what I'm doing. And they just listen to it and on the first take, they just nail it.
Wow.
So it's a remarkable thing to be able to watch somebody truly in their element doing exactly what they know how to do that is so foreign to me, and yet they're, you know, when it comes to the acting part, that's where I know what I'm doing, and they just sort of follow my lead, and it's just great fun, great fun.
How much time do you have, and I would imagine it varies, in terms of discovering a character that is different from the actor's normal voice? How much time do you have to work with the actor?
Not a lot, because the Screen Actors Guild essentially gives me 4 hours to get a session done with an actor.
Okay.
And for that series, unlike most of the series, I typically prefer to do what's called ensemble record, which means all the actors are in the room at the same time, and they rehearse together, they act and react off of each other. these series, the Boondocks, those episodes, a lot of the people are celebrities, and they aren't available to be in the room at the same time as the other actors. So I have them for 4 hours all by themselves. And so we'll sit there and we'll mess with the voice. And for the most part, I've hired them because of what I know they sound like. Mm-hmm. So they're already in the right place. But you hire someone like Mos Def, who actually was an actor first before he was a rapper.
Okay.
And he just comes up with these voices that are so wonderful. I mean, just stunning. I think is he Thugnificent? I think that's the name of his character. And he just, this voice that he came up with is just so funny and wonderful to listen to. And so my job sometimes for those series is, as much as anything, get out of the actor's way.
Yeah.
And just make sure that they're clear, that you can understand what it is they're saying. Now, there's, you know, some people in the black community who would have no trouble understanding what it is, but because sometimes the jargon is almost a different language.
Sure.
And we've got a wide audience for that show. You want to make sure that, you know, 50-year-old white women like myself can understand what it is they're saying, too. So I have to watch them for their clarity and make sure that everybody's going to be able to understand. And very often in those, because it's almost like another language, I have to stop and say, I'm sorry, I don't know what a wife beater is. And it's, you know, it's a T-shirt. It's what we would always call
sure.
a guinea T-shirt.
Absolutely.
It's, sleeveless Italian T-shirt. And so, you know, so, oh, okay, now I know what you're talking about. It's a wife beater. Okay, great, I get it. And so there'd be things like that where they'd be talking about, you know, some items that within the gangster rapper community, they know exactly what it is. And here's this, you know, Italian Jewish director raising her hand going, I'm sorry, I have no idea what you're talking about. What is that? For example, there was one episode that we did that there was a bunch of jokes about the Champagne Cristal.
Okay.
And there was an issue about it, and I said, what is the issue here? I don't understand. Well, apparently, the makers of Cristal did not like the fact that the wealthy black community was buying up Cristal, and that was the big, it would go into a club and easily drop $2.50 a bottle.
Sure.
For, you know, a case of it. And they made some big, you know, the makers of the champagne made some big nasty derogatory comment about, well, we didn't expect that to be our major, you know, buyers. So there was a big boycott. All the black rappers and everything were boycotting Cristal Champagne. So I had to ask about the background of that stuff because I didn't know about it. So it was an educational experience for me.
Do you know what are the rappers drinking these days? We all want to know.
No, I don't know. I don't know what they switched over to. I would assume whatever good champagne was available at the club they're in.
Okay.
But I don't know if there was a big major move to, you know, Veuve Clicquot or, you know, if there was a specific brand of champagne they moved over to. But I knew that they were boycotting Cristal specifically.
Wow.
Which is a shame because it's a really delicious, wonderful champagne. And it's you know, it's too bad that they had to switch over to another. But, you know, it's also a ridiculously expensive champagne, and most of us can't afford to buy it except for very special occasions.
I was going to say, Magruder doesn't, like, spring for that for the rap parties for each episode.
No, I think they were boycotting. I truly think
okay.
that the majority of, you know, black celebrities with the dough to afford it were just saying, you know what, they badmouthed us. They don't want us to buy their champagne, so we're not going to buy their champagne.
Unbelievable.
But I hope that it turns around and that all the big friendly family again because it's just a delicious champagne.
Being a radio person, I appreciate the flexibility that an actor may have just using their voice in terms of they can be any character as long as the voice delivers that character as opposed to being typecast by looks. So
exactly right. That's the joy of casting and directing voiceover is so often you can think of and use actors who would never be cast in these roles on camera because maybe they're not tall enough or not thin enough or not blonde enough or not young enough. And that tends to make people very kind of neurotic actors, neurotic and nervous, and it makes the whole on-camera world a little bit more stressful than animation voicing is because it's a very cut and dry. Either they can do the voice or they can't do the voice.
Okay.
And it doesn't matter if they're, you know, 90 years old like June Foray is, but she can still do the voice of Rocket J. Squirrel.
That's unbelievable.
It really is. And so you have that kind of freedom where, you know, there's this big thing that's happened in the last few years where celebrities want to do voiceover for animation, and it's for many reasons, but mostly because their kids want them to do it. They may, for example, do all these wonderful television shows or movies that their kids can't watch because they're really adult-themed, but when they tell their kid that they've been invited to come and play Batman or to play in a Batman episode, they are the hero of the household. And so it's a very sort of interesting time in that I'll get phone calls from the celebrity's agents saying so-and-so wants to come and play on a Batman episode or a SpongeBob episode. I've been directing SpongeBob for the last year or two.
Okay.
So all of a sudden you get Gene Simmons calling up, from KISS saying that his kids are absolute massive fans. Can he please come in and be a character on SpongeBob? Or David Bowie, who calls in and says, can I please be a character on SpongeBob? My kids are... So, what am I going to say? No. It's like, yes, sir, when are you available? We would love to have you come and play. So it's a whole change in the industry in that way. Now, I'm of the mind and have always been of the mind that it really should be the right voice, whether they're a celebrity or a non-celebrity. I don't cast celebrities just for celebrity's sake. If they're the right casting, then they get the role.
Okay.
If there's a rank-and-file voiceover actor who will frankly do a much better job, I'll fight for that actor. I won't always win that battle, but I am of the mind that it should be the best person for the role. But there's all these celebrities doing voiceovers, and they're fun to work with, and they're not intimidated by the work because they can come in with bedhead. They can come in ripped up jeans and dirty t-shirts, and as long as their voices are warmed up and they can do the gig, it's very freeing for them. They can do it. So I have a much bigger talent pool to pull from now than I did, let's say, 20 years ago when I was casting for Hanna-Barbera.
Okay.
And so I can approach, especially for these larger animated projects like the home videos you were speaking of, the DC Comics home videos, whether it's Justice League or Batman Gotham Knights or those kind of things. I have a bigger talent pool because I have, number one, a little bit more money I can offer them than I do for a regular TV series,
mm-hmm.
and because they're juicier roles. So I can look at, for an example, say Superman Doomsday.
Right.
And be able to go to Adam Baldwin or Jason Marsters and say, I've got this excellent role. It's Lex Luthor. Do you want to come and play? And I can offer you more than $750 for the role. And, their schedules typically are not good, not easy, but because voiceover for animation takes so much less time than their on-camera gigs take, they're much more willing to come in and say, okay, I can give you 3 hours this week. I can give you 2 hours the following week, and then I can come back in at the end of your production and give you another couple of hours when you're working to picture to fix some of the stuff, and I can make that work.
That's great. Let's get into some specific productions, and we may as well start with The New Frontier because it seems like it's been a big success.
Yeah, it's doing very well, apparently.
The there were a lot of different choices for that Justice League as compared to the series, and I'm curious, were the types of voice choices, were those your calls, or do you talk with the producers and do you guys discuss characters and say we want kind of a younger, upper, higher voice versus, say, the Flash as opposed to the deeper, commanding voice of Superman?
Absolutely. I never cast in a vacuum. It's never just me.
Okay.
Always with a large group of people, and I've done so much work with Bruce Timm, the producer, that he and I have a very good shorthand of conversation that we can speak in, and we know a lot of the same actors, having worked with them all the way back from, 1991. As a matter of fact, Bruce and I worked on Animaniacs together back in, 1989, so we've known each other for a really long time. But then, since the superhero stuff started to be created, he and I have done many, many projects together, and so he's the first person that I talk to. Then when there are these big projects that DC Comics certainly are involved in and Warner Home Video are involved in and they're footing part of the bill, so they have to have some say, of course.
Okay.
And then there's another division called Warner Premier, and they all have their specific thoughts about who they may want to get in. And then we'll sort of all run through the list and compile them and say, okay, let's put an order, a priority. We want to go after actor A first. We want to go after actor B second. We want to go after actor three. And then it depends on the actor's availability. They're, you know, some of them are very well-versed in the DC Comics world. They know exactly who some of these ancillary characters are. And then there's other people that you mentioned, Green Lantern, and they truly don't know who that is. No, they actually don't. There's just characters that they're just not familiar with. Flash, they kind of have heard of Flash, but they don't really know much about him.
Okay.
So then you start approaching the actors through the agents, and they want to do it, but they're not available during the production period. Or they want to do it, but they want on-camera money. And we don't have those kinds of budgets, frankly. You know,
sure.
Some of these guys are used to making $60,000, $70,000 a week on their television series. And then I go to them and say, I've got, you know, maybe a sixth of that, and I'll need you to come in five different times in order to make it work. And they're just not interested, and that's certainly their prerogative.
Sure.
And then there are other actors who are absolutely willing to come in for almost any price. They just want to do it because they have been, let's say, Wonder Woman fans since, you know, and they'll show me pictures of themselves as 5 years old, 5 year olds dressed in a Wonder Woman costume Halloween. And so those are the people that you absolutely know, absolutely want to be a part of it. They understand the character, and now they're, you know, 27 years old, and they're appropriate for the role.
That's great. You know, and I think going back to the Justice League series, there's some good, you know, and I don't mean to demean actors by calling them mid-level, but ones that aren't as well-known. And you mentioned people that know their DC Comics and stuff. I imagine Phil Morris is one of those guys playing
Jon
Stewart.
Best. I adore him.
He's awesome.
He's
yeah.
so talented and so bright and so grateful for every job he gets. As famous as he may get, he just loves to come and play. And I'm lucky that I've built up a relationship with a lot of actors over the years. And whereas for other companies or other directors, they may ask for more money, they'll come in and play with me because they know that I will make it a very pleasant environment. I won't make them be there 10 minutes longer than they have to be. And I've had the great pleasure of working with remarkable talent. And then every once in a while, John, I get these great chances where someone who has never done voiceover before for animation but is enthusiastic about it and whose work we all know because of their on-camera work, like David Boreanaz.
You bet.
Who just had never been in front of a microphone to do this kind of work before and just totally let himself be putty in my hands. And I watched him learn hour by hour how to do this stuff. And he was so good by the end. And then because we have, you know, I think your audience will know, and I'm sure you do as well, that we do the initial record first. We have a script. We record the initial session.
Okay.
And this all goes off over to Asia to be animated. Then it comes back to us, and we look at the voices with the picture, and sometimes it works perfectly, and sometimes we thought a character was going to be staged so that they were clear across the room from each other. So they're talking in these big, loud voices to make sure that it makes sense that they're in this big warehouse talking to each other across the space. When we get the animation back, in fact, they're right next to each other, but they're talking this loud, so it no longer makes any sense. So we have to bring them back in and work to picture and bring the level back down to a conversational level where it makes sense.
Okay.
That's one instance where you have the actor come back at the end. There's also instances where there may be a character called Clerk on the script, and I've cast a woman to play the clerk, and she, you know, has a conversation, and when the animation comes back, for whatever bizarre reason, it's a man. So I've got to go back in and revoice it with a man. Then there's instances where just for whatever reason, say, for example, we're going back to, say, Superman Doomsday.
Okay.
There may have been a scene where Anne Heche, as the voice of Lois Lane, breaks down in tears. And we really let her go, you know, as far as, like, go ahead and go for it, you know, give us the full emotion. And then when we get the animation back, we see that they animated it much more subtly than what she gave us. So we have to bring her back in and pull back a little bit on the emotion just to make it match picture. So there's all those instances where you bring the actors back in, and my whole point of bringing this up was David Boreanaz, as good as he got during the initial record, when he came back in, you know, 5, 6, 7 months later to do the ADR, he was even better. And so then also he gets to work with picture, so he actually has something he can sort of latch on to, and he's actually looking at what the character is doing, and that frees them a little bit more to sort of get into the character a little bit more, and he gets to see them interact, as opposed to when we're recording the actors initially, and we often have to record them separately because they're just not all available to work together.
Sure.
Then he gets to see what the actor after him responded like, and that gives him some insight as to how to do his line that will make sense. And he was a joy. Another person on the Justice League New Frontier project who I had had the opportunity to work with only once before was Brooke Shields.
Okay.
Brooke had come to work for me because her agent called me up when she was 8 months pregnant with, I believe, her second child, and could not do any on-camera work because it was just too strenuous for
her to
feed that long, but really wanted to work, just didn't want to be sitting around the house doing nothing. So I found her a role in an episode of The Batman,
okay.
And she came in and did a small guest role for me, and she was terrific, and she so enjoyed it. And I, you know, invited her after the rehearsal of The Batman and said, you know, we can record your lines after the rehearsal, and you can go home. She said, no, let me stay around for a while. If I get tired, I'll let you know, and then we can pick up my lines, let me go, but let me watch the process. And so she stayed almost to the end of the whole session. And then when I was casting this project, the New Frontier project, I thought of her right off for Lois Lane. And for
Carol Ferris?
Exactly, Carol Ferris. And so I called the agent, and she said, oh, Brooke would be delighted to work with you again. Well, Brooke had not only had an infant at that point and her other toddler, but was doing what on Broadway? Sweet Charity on Broadway, I think she was doing. Shooting 3 or 4 other things simultaneously. I mean, just doing like 10 different projects. And after we got like into week 5 or 6 of just not being available to schedule her, I said, you know, Brooke, I'm afraid we're going to have to move on. And she's like, absolutely not. I'm going to make this happen. And she just bent over backwards for us, John, and made it happen. I'm telling you, she was my hero, my heroine, and she really, truly just wanted to be a part of it and moved her life around so that we could record her from New York and could do the session. And just a wonderful actress and did a beautiful job.
Well,
also on this session, someone I had worked with before, Kira Sedgwick, who's just got that great voice.
Oh, yeah.
She was who I cast as Lois Lane on this project on The New Frontier. And I had worked with her on a project called The Mystery of the Batwoman and knew what a pleasure she was to work with. Now, Kira and I have worked together twice and never seen each other in person. We've never met in person. But it doesn't matter. She did just a beautiful job as Lois Lane. And, you know, because she is so busy on that wonderful series, The Closer, there was some ADR that was needed from her on the Justice League that was simply, really, really simply, as she gives the report that Superman is dead and she falls to her knees in the scene and cries. Well, they animated her crying longer than we had recorded her crying. And fortunately, Kira and my voice type is very, very similar. So I went in and did the remainder of her crying for her.
Wow.
Which has been, it's very funny because it's kind of like there's so many animated projects for Warner Brothers that have required me to cry for somebody. There was it was Return of the Joker, Batman Beyond. Yep, direct-to-video. And the kid that played Robin for me had a very, very intense emotional scene in that where he has been taken over by the Joker, and he is completely under the Joker's spell, and the Joker forces him to actually kill somebody.
Yes, I remember.
And it begins with him laughing, and then when he realizes what he has done, he cries uncontrollably. Well, the kid was just having a heck of a time with it and couldn't get it, and so I said, you know, let's just scratch it for now, which means somebody else does the voice, and we'll find somebody who sounds like our Robin, and we'll get them in, and we'll have them do it. And so I scratched it, and it's really intense. It's, you know, really intense laughing, and then really intense crying, and emotionally, it's very, very draining. And so Bruce Timm, the producer, by the time we got around to post-production on that project, he said, you know what, I just like Andrea's performance so much, we're going to leave it, which astounds me because I still think it sounds like an adult female rather than a kid. But Bruce just liked it, and we left it in. And so I now make the joke, now that I've done Kira's crying, I think I did a little bit of crying for Anne Heche. And so it's like, okay, that's my other job, is crying for actresses who may not be available.
Well,
so if this casting and directing career doesn't come through for me, I just know I can always find some work weeping on an animated series for Warner Brothers.
Well, checking IMDb, I noticed that you're playing Martha Wayne in Batman Gotham Knight.
I do a little bit of work in that. You know, I was an actress for a long time before I got into casting and directing,
okay.
So it's not like I don't know what I'm doing in that way. And I never take a role away from a voiceover actress who would normally get paid and be there and get that kind of gig.
Sure.
Every once in a while when there's a gasp or an oof or something really simple or a one-word cue for somebody, I'll step in and do it. And it's my pleasure to do so, and I'm always happy to do it. It's lovely to sort of stay, you know, sharp that way. I want to talk about a couple of other people who worked with us on Justice League New Frontier. It was such an interesting project, and I don't know if you've interviewed any of the other guys involved with it, but, you know, Darwin Cook created such a brilliant graphic novel for us all to work off of.
Absolutely.
And we had to really edit it down to a piece that was manageable for a 75-minute or 70-minute home video. And the casting is always such a massive, awesome responsibility for me, and as you know from, you know, again, if you IMDb me, you see that I've cast so many of these voices many, many times, and it was an awesome responsibility the first time I had to cast Batman. When we get into the fourth and fifth incarnations, it's getting really, really hard, because I've kind of gone through the people that I know can do it. But we get into this, and we have Flash, and the brilliantly talented Neil Patrick Harris came
here.
Into Flash for me, and he was stunning in it.
Yes, he was.
Jeremy Sisto, who I also never met in person, but just recorded ISDN, a satellite record,
mm-hmm.
from New York, and I thought was a brilliant Batman.
Me too.
Dark. And Kyle MacLachlan, again, who I never met in person, as Superman. And because this is a period piece, you don't want any of the characters to sound too contemporary. You need them to sound a little bit more classic voices. So Kyle MacLachlan, you know, it's funny. You look at the character design. You look at the big square jaw. You look at the time period, and he's perfect. He's just right on. And so even though I had to recast, you know, Superman, in this instance, it worked out really well because I needed a specific period of time sound, and Kyle was able to slip into that really, really easily. He was wonderful, I thought. There wasn't anybody on this entire piece that I thought was weak. Everybody was wonderful. And the wonderful Lucy Lawless, who came in to play Wonder Woman for me, was just so great and such a good sport. And, you know, if you buy the DVD, and I hope everybody will because the extras on it are so fun, and you get to see her working, and she was nothing but energy. Just this wonderful, energized, enthusiastic actress, which is what you want as a voice director. You want someone to that you have to actually pull back a little bit on. You don't want to have to be constantly saying, okay, I need more energy. Give me more. Give me more. Give me more. Instead, you want to be able to say, okay, great. I know you can get that big, that intense. Now let's find some subtleties within that and pull back a little bit. And she was just excellent.
That's great. You mentioned, you know, casting people for the right era as well. I think back to the 90s Batman animated series when you did the three stories, The Legends of the Dark Knight, and you had Gary Owens and I know Michael McKean do kind of that 50s slash
60s. Right. Good for you. I didn't even remember that. You're absolutely right. Yep.
You know?
Yep.
Well, that's the thing. And that's a testament to you because I think you do find these right voices and it comes through. And I also have heard from writers like Dwayne McDuffie and Marty Pascal who have heard the actors commenting as they've waited to maybe step in the booth. I'm not sure. But the actors would look at the lines and say, hey, you know, this is a little more meatier than the average cartoon script. And they're like, wow, there's a real story going on here. And I think they're surprised at the sophistication of the production because, you know, again, I think even Cartoon Network, I think, was surprised at how well a lot of these series did with adults, given that they were Y7 projects on paper.
Amazing. And that is a testament to the writers, absolutely, that they did give these. It's not, you know, the Super Friends, the old Hanna-Barbera series.
Which you worked on, I guess, correct?
I did not, actually. That was just before I got there.
Okay, because
I think one of the very last recordings that were done, like the first week I was there, I had to pick up, maybe Gary Owens or maybe Olin Soule or one of those actors.
Okay.
And then that was the end of those productions. I didn't work on any more of those.
Oh.
But it's certainly not that. That's not what we were making. And we knew from the get-go when we were making the first Batman, the animated series, that this was not our parents' Batman.
Yeah.
This was not our parents' Superman. This was going to be something different and dark and dramatically much more interesting. And that's why I'm so delighted that, as difficult as it was, the initial casting, to find the right guy for Batman, when I finally did find Kevin Conroy, and he walked in the room and auditioned, and we all just breathed a sigh of relief, saying, this is it. This guy gets it. He understands it. And, you know, I've known Kevin now for a million years. He's a dear friend of mine. And I asked him about how he came up with his personal concept of what Batman should sound like. And because we were all toying with the Clint Eastwood idea and the placement for the voice. And at that point, we did want Batman and Bruce Wayne to sound different from each other, a little bit different, but still clearly the same guy. And Kevin said, because he's a Juilliard-trained actor, he said, you know, Batman and Bruce Wayne, it's not that different than Hamlet. It's a story of vendettas. It's a story of vengeance. It's a story of a man who has lost parents. And, you know, how apropos that is and how classy that is for Kevin to come up with that idea of, let this be Shakespeare. Let this be Hamlet. And so that brought a whole other level of quality to the show.
That's terrific. And he really, isn't it amazing? Fans have really embraced him. And I think they point to that production as really one of the greatest portrayals of Batman, both in film and, of course, his voice. I mean, everyone just loves him.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And they all complain to me when I see them in person at, whether it's Comic-Cons or, you know, throughout the world. I was at an event last year called Armageddon in Australia and New Zealand.
Okay.
And the fans there were saying, Andrea, why is Kevin Conroy not the voice of Batman on every single thing that you do? And I had to explain to them that's because the people who, you know, sign my paychecks ask of me, please, we'd like a different Batman for this particular incarnation. And so I'm so happy to be able to tell them all that for the project Batman Gotham Knight, we were able to have Kevin Conroy be the voice of Batman. And it's so right that he is. He's so talented and so good. And let's talk about that project a little bit. Gotham Knight was such an unusual, different project in that what we did was, rather than do the initial voices from the get-go, which is how we would normally do it, is have a script and then record the voices, the real actors who are going to do the voices, ideally, and then animate it and then fix it in post in any kind of ADR we have to do. Instead, we did what's called scratch vocals from the beginning. So I just called up a bunch of my dear friend actors and said, will you please come in and help me just do the scratch vocals for this? So we had essentially a script of what we thought it was going to be, but knowing that each of the animation directors over in Asia was going to take it and do whatever twist they wanted to it, and we wanted to give them that leeway, and we knew that the dialogue was going to change. But we gave them a scratch vocal. They animated to that. Different segments, all of which look completely different stylistically, and then bring that back to us, and then we were going to go in and ADR it, which stands for Automated Dialogue Replacement, ADR it with the real actors that we wanted to use.
Okay.
So knowing that that was also going to be a very time-constricted production and that it was going to have to be done really quickly, I had to get people in who knew how to do that skill of ADR, who knew how to match the mouth flaps with voice, with words, and make it organic and feel right and feel like they created it. And so I knew, having worked with Kevin for so many years, that he could do that brilliantly, easily, wonderfully. And the only thing we were worried about was the few scenes where there's this style, and I forget exactly the name of the style, John, but it's an anime style whereby the characters all look extremely young.
Okay.
They're deliberately animated to look very young. And Kevin Conroy is my age. He's 50.
Okay.
And so you can't always guarantee that he's going to be able to sound 20. And I think we totally pulled it off. It was remarkable how good a job he did. And it also keeps a continuity, a singular through line throughout the piece that I think we needed. You can have other actors play other characters that come in and out of the stories, but you want Batman to be the one through line throughout the entire piece. And wait till you see it, John. It is so stunning visually. There are so many different styles, and it's so great because we all have different ideas of what Batman should look like,
mm-hmm.
and you get to see five different versions of it in this one piece, which is just great. And each piece stands alone in and of itself, but it begins with a scene where we see a bunch of kids telling their story of their seeing the Batman.
Okay.
And then we see all the different versions of it, and then in their sort of point of view, and then it comes back and we tie it all up together at the end.
Okay.
So just kind of a very interesting way to see to encompass all these different animation styles and how they all work.
That's
kind
of like
a terrific piece.
That's kind of like heavy metal. That's kind of like what they did with heavy metal.
So yeah, that's right.
That's great.
And there were some actors that, and this was not a piece in particular where it was called upon us to use celebrity voices, because you don't always know that celebrities are going to have that skill set to do this matching to picture. But I knew there were a couple of actors that I had wanted to work with for a while that fit the bill, and that I thought, you know what, let's just see if we can't make it work. And one of them is Gary Dordan from CSI.
Very
the
cool.
original CSI, the one that takes place in Vegas.
Yeah.
And Anna Ortiz, who is on Ugly Betty. Now, Anna Ortiz's agent had sent me her on-camera demo years before Ugly Betty hit the air.
Okay.
And I just thought, what a talented actress. I love her. Ethnic casting is always difficult. There aren't a lot of ethnic actors who know how to do animation voicing. And I always encourage ethnic actors to take voiceover classes and learn how to do it, because we need them, and they will get work doing it if they learn how to do it. So when a character is depicted as being black or Hispanic or Asian, I always make a very strong effort to book that ethnic background to play the voice.
Sure.
So I knew that the character that Anna was going to play was clearly Hispanic. Ramirez is her character name. And I wanted to give her a shot to come in and do it. And she did a great job. She was really great. It was hilarious, though. She came in with a horrible allergic reaction to all the pollen that was happening. And everything she did sounded like this. Every N, every M. So I said, Anna, before every single line, you have to blow your nose. I had to send my assistant out to buy a box of tissues and nose spray. I said, Anna, will you be offended if I ask you to use nose spray? And she said, no. I wish I had thought to buy it myself. And so my assistant goes out. We still tell the story about how Anna's special parting gift from the recording session was her own bottle of Afrin. And so she had to spray her nose and do the whole session, and she was great. And then Gary Dordan, who plays Crispus Allen, I had always wanted to work with Gary and had offered him several jobs, and he just wasn't available because he'd been working so much on CSI.
Okay.
And it just worked out. The stars aligned, and there was time for him to come in and do the voice of Crispus Allen. And I just knew he was a good actor and knew he'd be able to do it. And the ADR aspect of it is something I could teach him fast enough that they could learn to do it. And before I forget to say, John, I want to say that all those very wonderful friend of mine actors who came in and did the scratch vocals for me on the initial record on this, I cast them all as roles in this series.
Oh, that's terrific.
So they all did show up, whether it was George Newbern or Jason Marsden or Scott Menville, Hinden Walsh, all these guys who came in and did these voices for me. I made sure they all appear in it, so you'll hear all their voices in this piece when you get a chance to see it. You haven't been given a preview copy yet, have you?
No, not yet.
No, it's just swell. I can't wait for you to see it. It's really, really nice.
No, I'm. You know, I loved the Animatrix, and I love this idea of how to tie into a major film release. And Batman, you know, certainly lends itself to this kind of audience and this kind of product. So I think that's fantastic. And again, in capable hands. And also I noticed that a lot of the writers of the individual stories are a lot of the comic book writers. Brian Azzarello, Greg Rucka. So just to name
a couple. It keeps the whole thing kind of in a big family that understands it. You know, I'm probably the most ignorant of a lot of these characters. But, you know, people will come in and you know, I'll say, okay, you're playing so-and-so, and they go, oh, wow, well, in this episode he did this, and in this comic book he did this, and I'm like, he did. So I'm constantly learning. But you know what that does, John, is that makes me a really good sounding board, because if it makes sense to me, being kind of ignorant of some of this stuff,
okay,
it's going to also appeal to an audience that may not be as into it as some of the other audience members are.
Sure.
So there's always going to be your huge fanboy comic book experts who know all this stuff backwards and forwards. But my job is to make an entertaining piece for people who don't know all that backstory, who don't know all that, and to make it appealing to women, to female viewers, because this kind of show, this kind of home video, could really end up being just a male-oriented audience.
Sure.
And I want to make sure that Batman is sexy. I want to make sure that women fall in love with Clark Kent and Superman.
Cool.
That as bad as Sinestro may be, that there's something really appealing. And so it's not necessarily a bad thing that I am somewhat ignorant of all the history. I did not ever read a Batman comic book when I was a kid.
Wow.
We didn't read comic books when we were kids.
Okay.
It just was a family thing where they're just, you know, we didn't do that thing.
That's okay.
And so it makes me a really good audience member and a good judge of what's going to appeal to the major fans, and certainly by now, you know, 20 years into it, I know a lot more than I did when I began. But what's going to appeal to the diehard fans, and what's also going to appeal to people who really don't have much more history with it than, say, the George Reeves Superman on camera series.
Sure.
The contemporary Batman movies, the contemporary Superman movies, and maybe one or two other, you know, things beyond that. But they're not going to know some of the characters in the Justice League. And especially when we got into the series, the Justice League Unlimited, where somewhat obscure characters were introduced, and we didn't really even have time to flesh out their stories, but Red Tornado shows up, and you know, I didn't even know all of his abilities when I was trying to cast it. But, you know, you get to a show where you've got to cast 15 new characters in a week, and you just kind of have to look at it and go, okay, who's going to be able to give me three different voices in this session and understand it? And then you bring in the really talented Will Friedles and the, you know, Brian Georges and the Rob Paulsons, who really understand what it is that's going on, the Jim Meskimens, the Corey Burtons, these incredibly talented, versatile actors who understand the whole background. And you just give them a little bit of information, a line-drawing model of the character, and they just get it.
Well, and I think, again, to pull in women, the characterization of Hawkgirl was pretty two-dimensional in the comics and really came alive in the Justice League series, and especially the romance with Jon Stewart.
And wasn't that a great character? One of my favorite characters in Justice League was Hawkgirl. I just thought she was a terrific character.
Absolutely.
And the actress, Maria Kanells, brought such depth to that. You know, and the conflict that happens at the end of that series, where she has to decide, is she going to leave her place with the Justice League because of what has happened and how she really has kind of abandoned them for her own people? And, oh, it's just an amazing, wonderful, dramatic as any Shakespearean piece.
Absolutely.
And she brought beautiful depth to that character. I love that character. Hawkgirl's one of my favorites.
Well, you guys, again, I credit all of you, because I think everyone behind that show, and really most of the comic book adaptations that Warner's has done, it's really superior work. And you're a big part of that, because you find the right people in it. You help make it happen.
Thank you, John. Thank
well,
you.
As we wrap up, do you have a quick second to talk about, are you on this new Batman series, Brave and Bold?
I am.
Are you able to talk? We've seen the release about it.
We can do that. I am working on it, and there's not a lot I can tell you about it, except that we are allowing Batman to have more of a sense of humor than we've ever allowed him before. And, I'm sorry, that may not be exactly right. It's not that he never had a sense of humor. We're allowing him to show it more. And we're certainly not doing a big, broad, wah-ha-ha-ha-ha Batman.
Okay.
We're doing a Batman where we hear a lot of his thought processes. We hear what's happening in his head. And every once in a while, he'll have sort of a dry quip where he'll say something like, well, didn't see that coming, or something along the lines of that.
Okay.
And it gives a, you know, you can't keep repeating yourself. You have to do new work to keep yourself stimulated. We can't keep making the same Batman series. We can't keep making the same Justice League series. That's why, despite the fact that Justice League was still very popular, and could have certainly gotten picked up for more episodes, Bruce Timm just got to the point where he said, I've done it. We're done. Let's move on and do something new.
Sure.
Because you just can't keep repeating yourself. So if we're going to make another Batman series, and certainly it's a valuable property, Batman, and people are still interested in Batman, let's find some other twist on it. And so their idea was, let's let him be a little bit more human in his sense of humor. And also, what's interesting and really a challenge for me, John, is that casting-wise, the only character that appears in every single episode of this series is Batman.
Wow.
Every single episode has to be cast individually because somebody may, Aquaman might show up, and some of the characters will recur. We'll see Green Arrow a couple times, we'll see Aquaman a couple times, we'll see some of these other characters, but for the most part, when I get a script, it may be an entire script of brand new characters that I have not yet cast for this series. So it presents a really, really interesting challenge for me to come up with new actors, or new voices at least, for some of these characters that I have cast 4, 5, 6 times before. And the other problem, John, too, is that, you know, when you go to a party and every guest at the party is fun and you really like being with them, when you throw your next party, you want to invite all those same people again. And that's my problem when I'm casting. I want to invite those same people to the party.
Sure.
And so sometimes I do. So I can't resist the urge. I want to have those fun people in the same room with me again because I know it's going to be a pleasant experience for everybody. They're going to do a good job. And ideally, these actors are versatile enough, and most of them are, that they're not going to give me exactly the same voice. And I'm going to get a different performance from them. And they're not going to go, well, that's the same guy who played blah, blah, blah. Although, you know, fans are so savvy these days. And they listen and they go, oh, that's so-and-so, and he voiced this on this, and he voiced this on this. And so I have to be, you know, aware of what the fans are listening for, and hopefully I can please them on many levels in that I bring back their favorites, and that I also find new people that they haven't heard before, and that I bring in some celebrities that they don't object to. Because, you know, the truth of it is, if I'm not pleasing the fans, I'm not doing my job. Warner Brothers, Nickelodeon, Sony, all of us, we make these cartoons for the fans. That's who we work for. Yes, the fans don't sign our paychecks, but if we don't make cartoons that the fans don't like, nobody's going to sign paychecks for us. So, you know, I'm always interested in what the fans are looking at, what they're listening to, what they like, what they don't like. And so I'm always happy to get some really nice feedback. And so, you know, with all these different series that I do, whether it's The Boondocks or SpongeBob SquarePants or Avatar or, you know, Animaniacs or Pinky the Brain, any of those things, I love to hear what the fans have to say about it so that I can move forward and I can continue to grow as a casting director and as a voice director as well.
Well, as I said, you've got a fan in me because I think you guys do great work, and being a radio person, I immediately gravitate to the voices. And hopefully, maybe before Batman Brave and Bold gets started, we can reflect on Gotham Knight after it's been released and talk about your millions of other cartoons that we haven't even gotten to.
It will be my pleasure, John.
That's voice director Andrea Romano. Don't forget, Batman Gotham Knight comes out on DVD July 8th. Of course, you can also find Justice League The New Frontier already out on DVD. For more examples of Andrea's work, all you have to do is check the TV listings for shows like The Boondocks, the Batman Animated Series, the Justice League Animated Series, SpongeBob SquarePants, all the various programs, so many that, as I said, I hope to have a future interview with Andrea so we can cover even more great work that she does. That'll do it for this edition of Word Balloon. Thanks a lot for listening. This is John Suntress. Hope to be in better voice the next time we talk. And looking forward to seeing everybody at the New York Comic-Con. In the meantime, you can catch Word Balloon all over the internet. We're at newsarama.com. We have our MySpace page. Any questions or comments on the show, you can reach me via email, john@wordballoon.com. Until next time, Word Balloon is a copyright feature of Shaky Productions, copyright 2008.